A terrible story. They think we are cynics, but if you don't come into politics to make the world a better place, you'll quickly find it a desolate trade. The Master. There was literally nobody in Glaikit who David Petrie would have considered less likely to recruit him into a real political career than Tony Moretti. They'd known one another since school. Tony had been a couple of years ahead of Davy, and he was the same stoop-shouldered, lank-haired malcontent now that he had been back then. He'd been a yesser, of course. The son of the local chip-shop owner, he was now a journalist, what else, working for the Scottish Socialist Newsletter, which at least kept him virtuously poor. He'd regularly denounced Davy's father and the Labour clique in the council, which rather put him up in Davy's estimation. Years of serving in a fog of cooking fat had given him a red, slightly pockmarked face, and his politics were appropriately rancorous. He seemed somewhere to the left of Galloway and Sheridan. So when Davy opened his door one evening to see Tony sternly staring back at him through his thick glasses, he had been unwelcoming. Polite, but unwelcoming.
"Weel, Moretti, this is a surprise. Come to see how the embourgeoisificationists are doing."
"No, Mr. Petrie. Here with a story. Need your help."
Eyebrows raised, Davy had let him in, helped him off with the scruffy, revolutionary, badged leather coat, and made him a cup of tea. It turned out that Moretti had one hell of a story. One that would change Davy's life. It all went back to the Forlaw massacre, he explained. A deranged gunman, a loner called Tom Hooper, had killed 14 schoolchildren getting off a scout's bus, as well as the driver and a passing policewoman. He then turned the gun on himself, but had succeeded only in blowing off part of his jaw. Patched up, convicted, voiceless and despised, he was now one of Scotland's most heavily protected prisoners at HMP Grampian. It turned out that Hooper had been involved in anarchist as well as survivalist groups, and Moretti had been working on a theory that somehow he'd been drugged before the attack, as part of a conspiracy against the far left. To Petrie's surprise, Moretti told him that he'd been allowed to visit Hooper in jail. That was why he needed his help.
"Seems a bloody mad conspiracy theory to me, Tony. I hope that's not why you're here."
"No, Mr. Petrie, that was always daft. It's what he told me after that made my hair curl."
"Looks straight enough to me, Tony. Unless of the mister." "Fire away, then."
"Well, Petrie, it was a sore long bloody trek to get to see the man at all. His lawyers didn't want me to go. This guy's so hated they don't want another word written about him. Ever. Time and memory loss. They say that's his best hope.
Maybe so.
But see, I did not understand why anything mattered to that guy anymore, a man who'd been political after all.
Family don't visit. Nobody visits. Nobody asks what he knows. So I said I was writing a book. A lot of hassle with the prison service, right, but at last I get permission to contact the guy directly. He writes me back, 'Okie dokie, come over.'
The prison's south of Peterhead. New like. Train to Aberdeen, then the bus. Guys like him are kept on their own corridor, bottom floor.
They didn't want me with the other visitors. With Isle of Neds, I guess. He's had a few beatings already. So, we meet in his cell with the screw standing by. With me so far? Right.
I asks Hooper to tell me about his political views. He just shakes his head. I tell you, Mr. Petrie, he's a terrible sight.
Nothing much on the one side beneath his cheek, just a great hanging sack of purple and long white scars. He's got a wee mouth left on the other side. He can suck up food through a straw, but he can't speak."
Davy felt queasy. Tony Moretti was not what he'd expected. He was composed, direct, and unembarrassed. He seemed to have human sympathy for this man who Scotland was trying to forget.
"That's terrible. I thought these days, you know, reconstructive surgery."
"No, not for the likes of him. Anyway, I ask him more questions. B's no interested in all that tripe. He just writes some notes of his own."
Moretti delved into a scuffed shoulder bag. "I brought them." There were a few short notes written on torn pieces of lined paper in pencil and in awkward capital letters. Not the writing of an educated man. "Wrong, I had gun at all. Police said I could not. Told go stuff themselves. Minister knows what I can say. No body believes me."
"Not sure I can make head or tail of these, Tony. What's he saying?"
"Well, I asked him, of course, and he can nod and shake his head. Turns out the local police tried to get his gun license revoked. He'd always been a weird one. Reputation for hanging round schools, that sort of thing. And he did have pretty wild views. But the police recommendation was squashed, overruled whatever higher up the chain."
"Who by?"
"Good question. I tracked down the chief copper from back then. First off, he didn't know what to talk to me. Troublemaker and all that, but I wore him down. Turns out that quite a lot of Hooper's story is true. The copper did try to get Hooper's firearms license removed, he told me, but the chief constable intervened.
My man didn't argue. Nae point. Pension and all. After we were finished, he started greeting. Man of 70 years, but..."
"What about the chief constable? Did you go to see him?"
"He's dead now. But one step further up the ladder, the guy Hooper says was behind it all is very much alive and kicking. Lord Auchinleck these days. Tory minister at the Home Office at the time. Freemason, I'm thinking. Big golfer, and you guessed it, best pal of the dear departed chief constable."
One step at a time, Davy thought to himself, and you could end up taking a very weird journey.
"I think that's what they call circumstantial. Why would Lord Auchinleck concern himself with the gun license of an obscure saddo and, forgive me, Tony, political nutter living in a small town in Scotland?"
Moretti smiled a slow, sad smile, and his dark eyes caught Davy's.
"Bingo! Right damn question again, Mr. Petrie. You could make a useful leg man for the newsletter yet."
He paused, and his voice became slower, deeper.
"Have you heard of the Cricklewood Boys' Home affair?"
"No."
"Well, this is where it gets very interesting. It wasn't a proper home, apparently, more a kind of halfway house for lads coming out of young offenders' institutions and council care. Lots of skinny, fucked-up, scared wee boys living there in the 1980s and 1990s. You ken where I'm going?"
"I'm afraid so."
"Well, so I am. It was a wee paradise for pedos. Early days of the internet, harder back then. Nods and winks. Men came from all over. Tom Hooper for one. Politicians as well. A certain chief constable, a certain Lord Auchinleck."
"Aye, and aye.
So they couldn't have wee Tommy Hooper shooting his mouth off, could they?"
"Not the most felicitous expression, Moretti, and still circumstantial.
But, sweet Jesus, a sex-ring cover-up led to the Forlaw Massacre? That's fucking dynamite."
David Petrie exhaled. He felt sullied, as if he needed to take a shower. He felt himself shaking with anger as well. He thought of his two boys and those waifs in a North London hellhole. It was like something out of Dickens.
No, it was worse than that. "So why'd you bring this to me, Tony? It's the biggest story of your career."
Well, I guess that's it. The career. I've got strong principles, Mr. Petrie, the kind I'm afraid you and your like will never understand. But that makes me suspect in the eyes of the wider world. There's a huge effing cover-up going on. It isn't just Auchinleck. There's a whole bunch of them. I wouldn't be surprised, Labour as well as Tories, Liberals too. We go big on this in the newsletter and they'll just stamp on us all. Bring in the Hygieian lawyers, criminal libel, you name it. Just some kind of left-wing conspiracy mania. But you, you're different. The chancy wee footballer, son of the big man, was dribbled and dodged his way into the Premier League. You've spoken at national conferences, you've met the likes of Miliband and Straw and that top shite Murdoch White. One of them speaks out on this in public and the balloon goes up. It all goes sky high. It'll help Labour in the next election, and Christ knows you're going to need some help under that bampot Grimaldi. It'll help you too, because you'll get the praise for bringing the story out. And it'll help me, because you fucking well credit me for this, or I'll tear your balls off, Mr. Petrie, no offence. We'll get it into the Nationals. And then we'll get the bastardy bastards and give those poor wee boys the justice they've been denied. David Petrie realised two things. Firstly, that he'd badly underestimated Tony Moretti. Second, that he had no choice. Politics, if it was about anything, was about justice. Boyhood should be sacred. His job now was to take this story and rub the faces of a few men in the shit until they cried for mercy. To his surprise, he found himself feeling elated. Energetic. He wasn't bored any longer.